Hello, everybody. Welcome, welcome. This is Joanna, and we are on our fifth call already for Sacred Depths. We're starting a new module today. We're starting our Creating Awareness module. Before we get there, I just wanted to spend a minute or two on partner coaching calls. So I've heard from many of you that your partner coaching practice calls are going really well and that they're full of insights and learning, and so much is happening there. I'm really happy to hear it. If you haven't yet started your partner coaching calls, you definitely want to start soon. And if you have any questions at all on how to move through them, if you and your partner feel like you're not quite getting it, please let me know. You know, because when you can work the partner calls well, they're just so powerful and they can be such added value. So if you have any questions at all, please post them in the Facebook group, anything like that. And actually, let me just, you know, check in now. Do you have any questions for me on the partner coaching calls? Anything that you need to know in order to move forward with them if you're participating in that? Star two. No? Okay. I just wanted to check in there. And again, if you've got any questions, please, please just let me know. I'm here to help in any way that I can. All right. So let's dive into Creating Awareness Part 1. So this is going to be a three-call module. Like the listening module, we're going to do two calls that are more like training calls, and our third will just isolate the skill in a practicum. So what is creating awareness, and why is it so important? Well, creating awareness as a coaching skill is literally the act of supporting your client to see something about themselves or their situation that they weren't previously able to see, or to support your client in being able to acknowledge and accept something about themselves or their situation that they weren't previously able to acknowledge and accept, or to support your client in being able to more deeply embrace something about him or herself or her situation that will help her become more confident, more clear, more able, or more open. Creating awareness, I'm going to just repeat everything I just said because there was a lot in there, and I want you to really get it. So in coaching, creating awareness is the act of supporting your client, number one, to see something about themselves and their situation that they weren't previously able to see. Number two, supporting your client in being able to acknowledge or accept something about themselves or their situation that they weren't previously able to acknowledge or to accept. And number three, to support your client in being able to more deeply embrace something about herself or her situation, so that she can become more confident, more clear, more able, and more open. Creating awareness is also a strategy that allows your client to feel seen, heard, and loved even more deeply. And that's because when you're really masterful at creating awareness, it allows both the coach and the client together to see the client more clearly and to hold her in her truth. creating awareness can support clients to see their blind spots, their patterns, their achievements, their gaps, their obstacles, their inner answers, their talents, their truest desires. And creating awareness can sometimes help create a breakthrough in an instant. It can really be that simple sometimes. You know, take a moment and think about if this has ever happened for you before. Has someone, whether it's been a coach, a friend, a colleague, a family member, reflected something back to you, and just in that instant, it's like all of a sudden you could see the whole situation with whole new eyes or see yourself in a different way. You know, that's happened to me so many times, and I'll just tell you one quick story just to illustrate the power of this. So this is years back, close to the beginning of my business, and I was connecting in with someone I hadn't met in person, but it was a possible joint venture partner of someone who was a colleague, a shared friend had introduced us and had shared our websites with each other, and I was getting on the phone with her to see if there was some way we might partner together. And we had a lovely conversation about our businesses and about ourselves, and we were on the phone for about 45 minutes. And, you know, we strategized on some ways we might support each other and joint venture, you know, this and that. And just at the tail end of our call, just as we were kind of starting to wrap things up, this other woman, she said, you know, before our conversation, all I really had to go on about you was your website, and in particular, your headshots on your website. And, you know, I just want you to know your personality and your depth and your aliveness and just all of who you are, your amazingness, is just not reflected in your headshot. All. It really looks like you're hiding in the pictures that you're sharing on your website. You know, she said, I know we don't know each other, and you know, I hope I didn't overstep, but I just really wanted to let you know. And, you know, my initial reaction and response was first to kind of like get defensive and kind of get pissed off at this woman who I barely know telling me that my headshots suck, you know, all this stuff. But, you know, I was able to move past that pretty quickly. I went back and, you know, I kind of really took it in. I took a look at those headshots. They were terrible. I was wearing an outfit that I thought made me look more professional, but just was not, it didn't look good on me at all. It was very dark colors. I wasn't looking straight at the camera. I looked at it, I was like, wow, I really am hiding. You know, these headshots are supposed to be about being more visible, and I'm doing anything but in these photographs. And then that really kind of activated for me a path of looking at, well, why am I hiding? You know, I want to grow this business. Why am I hiding? And it opened up so much for me, and it ultimately, through that exploration, allowed me to be so much more visible in my business and make my marketing so much stronger. And it was just literally 20 seconds of creating awareness that this woman had done. So the ability to support a client in creating awareness, the ability to really create awareness for a client, stems directly from you as the coach being a masterful listener. You can't create awareness on something that you haven't actually heard from or seen from your client, right? That's why we look at listening before we look at creating awareness. And you can't support your clients in creating awareness if you're operating with unchecked filters, right? So, you know, again, for example, if you're listening to a client and this person is clearly, let's say, miserable in their marriage and they've tried every which way to shift things and change things and, you know, therapy and this and that and the other thing, and it's just not working. If you've got a filter that says, you know, at all costs, avoid getting divorced, if you've got an unchecked filter there, then it's going to be really hard to create awareness around, you know, is divorce a possibility that needs to be looked at here, right? So one of my coaching philosophies and one of the ways that I really approach my client sessions and my client work is that I want to create an environment where my client can be as aware of herself as possible and as aware of her situation as possible before we move on together to the strategizing part of the session or the strategizing part of the coaching journey. So I want to pause on this for a moment because this is important. One mistake that coaches can oftentimes make is that a client will present a goal for the coaching or an intention for the coaching session, and the coach will jump straight into the strategy. And it's really, really tempting to do that, no matter what you're coaching on. And I'll just, you know, I'll give an example from business coaching. You know, oftentimes a client will come to a session and say, okay, you know, I want to do this event and I want to fill it. You know, so I really want to use this session figuring out how to fill this event. And it can be so tempting to just want to jump in. There's so much strategy we can talk about there, you know, game plan, all of that. That's a big part of coaching. But what I have really found and learned over the years is that if you don't take the time to create awareness first for the client around the situation, if you don't take time, you know, in the example that I gave, if I don't take a little bit, and it doesn't have to be a long time necessarily, it doesn't have to take the whole session, sometimes it might, right? But if you don't take some time first, you know, in that example that I gave, to help create awareness around why the client really wants to have this particular goal, for example, or what some of their fears are, or what some of their blocks are, or what some of their past patterning around filling, you know, events are, or, you know, just what's even happening in their calendar, creating awareness around, like, what their schedule is looking like over the next few months as they go to fill it, right? If you don't take the time to do that, then there's too much. There's too many pieces that are going to end up in your client's blind spot and in your own blind spot when you get to the strategizing. And if there's blind spots when you're strategizing, then you're either going to create an unsound strategy or you're going to create something and it's not going to end up working, or the client is going to end up having resistance to doing the action steps. It's not going to work as effectively as it can. So, you know, one of my philosophies is always, you know, every now and again, you know, there's a moment to just jump straight into the strategy without creating awareness. But honestly, 9 times out of 10, if you take just a little bit of time to create awareness, everything will work so much more powerfully. everything will move so much more smoothly. You're going to end up with a strategy that is way, way, way more effective. So there's a number of ways that you can create awareness for clients. I'm going to share all of the ways, and then we're going to hone in on a couple of them today. So the first way to create awareness as a coach is to ask questions that illuminate the truth, to ask questions that create awareness. We're not going to focus on questioning today. We've got a whole module on questioning after the new year. And then also so many other of the skills that I'll be teaching, befriending fear, navigating resistance, getting off the wheel of self-sabotage, all of those are all related to questioning. The second way, the second tool or strategy you can use to help create awareness for clients is something that I call reflecting the truth. Reflecting the truth. And that's the big strategy that we're going to be really honing in on today. Consulting is actually a subset of this. Sometimes you've just got expertise that your client doesn't have. That's a way of creating awareness, right? So that's another way. Acknowledging and celebrating are ways of really powerfully creating awareness for clients. We'll be taking a look at those on our next call, as well as personal anecdote and storytelling. Those are also really powerful strategies, tools for creating awareness. We'll look at that a little bit today and then some in our next session. And then the other tool for creating awareness is sharing myth and metaphor. For those of you that are in level two, we're going to be looking at that a little bit in our retreat in the spring. So those are the different ways. Questions that illuminate the truth, reflecting the truth, consulting and sharing expertise, acknowledging and celebrating, personal anecdote and storytelling, and then myth and metaphor. So most of the time, the way that you want to create awareness is going to be by asking really good questions. In many cases, asking questions that illuminate the truth is really going to be the preferable way to create awareness. And that's because when your client can really hit on the truth, on the awareness on their own, without you telling the client, without that truth being told, much of the time that's going to make the deeper impression and impact. Much of the time that's how the client is going to take it in more deeply. If she hits upon it herself from one of your questions, it can be way more effective than if they're simply told. A lot of the times, your client is going to own the awareness, the truth, way more if they say it first themselves, right? There's just something about that. And for anyone that has been around little children or observed little children, you know that this is often true. There's such a difference between when I tell my kids to put on a jacket because it's really cold outside versus them figuring it out on their own because they freeze their butts off one day without a jacket, right? It's like so much more powerful for them to come to the conclusion themselves. They're just going to believe it more. They're going to take it in more, you know, all of that, right? Not to compare coaching to parenting too much or, you know, being with children too much, but I do find that there are a lot of similarities. So you often want to go with questioning first, but sometimes the piece of awareness that you want to create is just so, so, so deep in your client's blind spot that questioning alone isn't going to do the trick. Or sometimes the awareness is something that you know, but there's no way that your client could figure it out by you asking a question, because it's something that you just need to know from experience, and you as the coach have the experience with it, right? It's your expertise. And yet other times you'll just feel intuitively that directly reflecting the truth, directly sharing the awareness with the client, just really directly and clearly, is what's going to make the most impact for them. It's almost like every now and again, instead of the client needing to figure it out through questioning, through them, you know, hitting on it, every now and again, it's almost like this dramatic heightened moment, if it's the right thing, where if you straight up reflect the truth, it's going to be the most powerful. So again, don't use reflecting the truth as a default. So the first go-to place is almost always going to be questioning. You know, at least 50, 60, 70% of the time, you're going to want to get to this truth, to creating awareness through questions. But every now and again, in my opinion, straight up reflecting the truth just directly is what's necessary. Now, just to be, you know, clear on this, there's some coaches and coaching philosophies out there that are going to say it's never, ever, ever appropriate for a coach to straight up reflect the truth, that it's always about asking questions and having the client get there on their own. But I don't subscribe to that. Just from all of my decades of coaching and practicing and supporting, I really do feel like there is a time and a place for reflecting the truth. Now, again, only if you're listening well, only if you're checking your filters well, only if you're really using your intuition and following your hunches, right? So you can choose not to use reflecting the truth as a strategy, you know, whatever is going to work for you. But I just wanted to sort of give you the background here. I think it can be very powerful at the right moment. So let's dive deeper into this skill of reflecting the truth. Again, reflecting the truth is literally when you straight up share with your client what you're seeing or sensing. It may be based on them and who they are. Well, it will always be based on them and who they are. But also sometimes in addition, it might be based on wisdom that you've gleaned from your particular expertise. That is something that there's no way this client could know from their prior experience. So I want to just give you some examples of reflecting the truth. So that you understand a bit more what I'm talking about, right? So maybe you're listening to a client and you see that, you know, what's in her blind spot is that she's actually never really forgiven her partner for something that happened 10 years ago, right? So you may share that with her, right? Or maybe your client says that she wants to lose 10 pounds, but from what you're hearing, you're not actually sure that that's what she wants. It sounds more like that's what her mother would like for her, to lose the 10 pounds, but that's not really what she wants. But she doesn't realize that. She's just talking about this goal as if this is her desire. Or maybe you see that your client is overgiving, and that this overgiving, right, to others, whatever it is really causing him harm. But it's in his blind spot. He doesn't see that. Or maybe you see a pattern where every time your client accomplishes something that's really important to her, she then goes and does something that's total self-sabotage. But she doesn't see it that way. She's just, like, in her victim, you know, like, things, I can't move things forward. Or maybe as you hear a client talking, what you're seeing is that there's actually not enough time in the day for her to accomplish everything that she wants to accomplish. Or there's not enough time in the year for her to accomplish all of that, right? Now, that might be an expertise thing, right? That part, that piece I was talking about before, you've done this many, many times before. You know from your own experience. It can't, like, you know, for example, for me, when I have a new client, and they say, in the first 4 weeks, they want to, you know, generate four times the amount that they have the last year. They want to do that in the first month. You know, again, I don't wanna be a downer, and I always let them know, you know, there's a possibility this can happen, but from my experience, that's a really big stretch, right? Or maybe you know that a client just isn't creating enough time and space to prepare for a presentation that she's giving, right? That's something that she couldn't know. She's never given a presentation like the one that she's giving, but you know from your expertise, right? So you want to reflect the truth back to her that she's simply not creating enough time for that. So hopefully, as you can see from these examples, sometimes the truth that you are wanting to reflect isn't an easy truth for your client to hear. Sometimes it is, right? Sometimes it's easy breezy, reflect the truth. But a lot of times when you're going to be reflecting the truth, it might be an awareness that it's not so easy for your client to hear. And that's actually just another reason why, even though reflecting the truth can seem quicker than creating awareness by using questions, sometimes creating the awareness via question can be more effective or easier, because again, sometimes the hard truths are easier heard when the client realizes this on their own versus when they're told, right? But again, for today, we're going to focus on the reflecting the truth tool. So there are a couple of different ways that clients, that human beings, respond to being presented with a harder truth. There are a couple of ways that human beings respond, and I want to share with you the different ways that they respond so that you know. You've probably experienced some or all of these, if not in clients, then either in yourself or in others. Number one, this is best, the funnest one we can say, you share a hard truth, you reflect a hard truth, and your client gets it. She hears it. She understands it immediately, and she has a breakthrough, you know, from it and is ready to integrate. That's the easiest. But there are a couple of other different ways that human beings might respond to reflecting a hard truth. Another way a client might respond is they may get angry or defensive or go into denial about it, right? Sometimes that can happen when we're presented with, you know, something like, you've never really forgiven your partner for X 10 years ago. You know, they may get angry at first or go into denial, get defensive. Another way they might respond is they might go into self-judgment or victimhood or hopelessness. Or they might check out or get confused, right? These are all just very normal human responses when a zinger is being shared with them. So this is why you want to be really skilled and really clear on how to reflect the truth so that you have the best chances of your client hearing it, getting it, understanding it, and then having a breakthrough awareness because of it and integrating it. And in a little bit on this call, we'll actually get into the step-by-step mechanics. There's different ways to do this in a really masterful way. But before we get there, I want to spend some time and really look at the energetics of this. I want to take a look at the difficulties that you as a coach might encounter internally if you're thinking about reflecting a hard truth to a client. Because the mechanics on how to reflect the truth, the step-by-step, those are not very complicated. You know, you'll get them as soon as I share those details with you. But it's the inner stuff here that can really actually get you off track as a coach, that can make things get a little wonky, and that can detract from your masterful delivery of the truth. So why is it sometimes hard for a coach to reflect a hard truth, to create awareness by delivering a truth? Well, pretty simple. It's because as coaches, sometimes we have a fear of hurting others, our clients. Or we maybe have a fear of harming our clients, like this might do harm if I share this truth. Or maybe we have a fear of our client getting angry at us or upset with us. Or maybe we're scared that, you know, he's going to have an emotional reaction that we can't handle. And I'll give you an example. For me, and this is something that I'm really good at, right? I actually have really worked through so much the energetics of this. I have a lot of experience in reflecting hard truths. And every now and again, it's still, you know, every now and again on a coaching call here and there, it'll still give me pause. And, I'll give you just a quick example of this. I have a client that I've been working with for many, many years. We're very close. She is incredible. I've supported her to just do amazing things in her business and in her coaching and in her facilitation, just such inner growth. We've done a lot together. And a couple of months ago, I noticed, this is what happened over the course of a few months, I noticed that even though I had taught her so much about how to facilitate retreats and how to create curriculum, and she's really masterful, like, so she can lead retreats now that just brings her clients to their knees. They sign up over and over and over again because of this. What I was noticing was that even though this is true, that she really is so masterful now, that she was really needy with me in regards to every time she would create a curriculum. It was like she, you know, I had to hold her hand through every single workshop and every single retreat, and she was second-guessing herself and all of that. And for this particular client, I know that she really values my support, and it really helps her feel seen and heard and good, you know, that she knows that she can, like, come to me and ask me anything, and I'm there to support her. We've worked a lot, you know, without getting too much into backstory, we've done a lot of inner work for her around, you know, just having someone reliable in her life to support her. And so anyway, I was noticing that she was being really needy and that she actually could do this all on her own, and she was almost using me as a crutch when it came to curriculum development. And what I also saw, you know, is that she wasn't totally owning her expertise and all of that. But I knew that it would be a little tricky to share that with her because there was the potential that she may get a little triggered and think like, oh, it's just taking up too much of my time to help her with her curriculum, right? So I had this tiny little, I wanted to reflect this truth to her because it was so much about her taking the next steps and owning her expertise, not feeling like she needed my approval on every little curriculum choice. But it did give me pause for a moment, right? Because I didn't want her to get insulted in any way or think I was pulling my support in any way. So again, even if you're really good at reflecting the truth, don't tune out for this conversation that we're having right now, because there's always a deeper place to go with this inside of yourself and then with your skills, and there's always more mastery to gain on this one. Because reflecting the truth really requires bravery. It really does. It really requires resolve in taking a stand for your client, right? I feel like that's one of my biggest jobs as a coach, is to take stands for my clients. And if I'm going to take a stand, I'm going to have to reflect some hard truths to them. It's really, reflecting the truth is about having love and compassion too, right? It's about having courage. And I love that, you know, the root for courage comes from the French word for heart, right? In order to have courage, we also have to have passion, right? We have to take that, really desire to take that stand for our clients in order to reflect the truth. And the other thing that reflecting a hard truth requires is for you as the coach to be comfortable holding space for somebody who isn't comfortable necessarily. It requires you to be comfortable holding space for somebody who is uncomfortable. Because not always, but sometimes the confrontation with a truth can make a client temporarily feel uncomfortable. It can make them temporarily, like I said, feel judgmental of themselves or you. It can maybe temporarily have them feel regret about something. It can maybe temporarily make them feel sad or grief about something. These are all very natural reactions if you're being really honest with your client. So you as the coach need to be willing to sit in the discomfort with them, to hold space for some discomfort, to not feel like you want to run away from their discomfort, to lovingly be with it and with your client with full presence, right? Full love, full compassion, full presence. A couple months ago, I had, you know, just to give another example, I had an experience. I had a client who successfully filled her first group program. We had worked on a kick-ass curriculum. We had looked at her facilitation skills. She was good to go. And what happened was, slowly, over the course of a few months, a couple of clients stepped out of the program. One by one, people were stepping out. And when she shared the details with me, she shared a detail with me that I didn't know about because it was stumping me. I was like, why are people stepping out of this? And then she shared a detail just kind of in passing that she, I don't think, realized was important. She said, you know, I've rescheduled a lot of the classes, you know, this happened and that happened, and, you know, there were like four or five of the group calls in a row that I scheduled for a different time, a different date. I let people know last minute about it. And this is a client who's very sensitive. She just happens to be very sensitive. She happens to be very hard on herself. I had to take a moment and really, you know, cultivate all that I was just talking about before and, you know, reflect the truth back to her, which is that the reason why, and people were getting angry too, you know, the reason why people were getting annoyed and angry and just leaving the program was that she wasn't holding a tight enough container. She was doing a lot of last minute scheduling, you know, and so it was a moment where she had to really take responsibility, right, that she kind of messed that up a little bit, and it was uncomfortable, and I had to really be up for sitting there with her, helping her not be too judgmental or hard on herself or, you know, anything like that, or become victimized or just come to any conclusions that she's never going to be successful or, you know, any of that. I had to sit in that discomfort with her, but I had to be willing to reflect that truth, or else she would have just gone on, right, and not realized that that was a problem. So I want to take some time to do some inner work around this first for you. I'm going to ask you some questions. We'll do some journaling and sharing, and then we'll get to the mechanics, like the actual skill of how you reflect the truth in masterful ways. So here's the first question that I want you to consider, and I'll give you about a minute or two to journal on it. What fears come up for you when you consider sharing the truth as you see it, sharing truths as you see them? This can be with clients, with friends, with family members, whatever it is. What fears come up for you when you consider sharing the truths as you see them? Take a minute with that one. Okay, next question. What fears come up for you when you consider sharing controversial opinions with others? And so, you know, an example for me is, you know, in my work, a lot, some of the truth reflecting that I do really goes against the grain of the coaching and transformational industry. So if a client comes to me and they want to, like, do, like, 10 different newfangled, you know, marketing, you know, craze type things, and, you know, I just have to reflect the truth that this is marketing insanity. It's just crazy marketing hype, right? Or sometimes I have, you know, when I was working more with very new entrepreneurs, they would come and, you know, they would, you know, because there's so much talk in the industry about high-end clients, they'd want, you know, just in their first few months out to be signing five-figure contracts with, you know, not much experience and not much marketing experience and not much visibility. And I'd have to, you know, kind of reflect the a little controversial, because a lot of the industry says, yeah, you can just do the five-figure, you know, right away. And, you know, to share that that is not so possible and maybe not even in full integrity, right? So what fears come up for you when you consider sharing controversial opinions with others? All right, next question. How often was the truth named and spoken about in your family growing up? Or even now, right? How often was the truth named and spoken about in your family growing up and now? Next question, how was the truth shared in your family growing up or now? Was it shared in loving ways, in supportive ways, or not supportive ways? Was it half-truths that had you feel unsafe? Was it shared with fear? How was the truth shared? Or was it just shared openly, lovingly, and totally in aligned ways, right? How has the truth been shared in your family? Take a little more time with that one. Really think about it. How is the truth delivered in your family? Family of origin. Next question. Do you have experiences from when you're younger, of being told a hard truth, a harder truth, but having it be delivered with love and compassion? Do you have any experiences, could be when you're younger or even now, of being told a hard truth, but having it delivered with love and compassion? And if you do have, if you have had that experience, what can you extrapolate from it? You know, think on it for a moment. What do you notice about that? What can you learn from it? Next question, how do you take in, receive, and respond to feedback or harder truths that other people share with you? How do you take in, receive, respond to feedback or harder truths that other people share with you? Do you respond? Do you react? Do you get angry? Do you get self-judgmental? Do you take it in with stride? What are your own reactions when a hard truth is being reflected to you? We've got just a few more questions for you. What role does getting defensive play for you in your own reactions to being confronted with a truth? What role does getting defensive play for you when you're being confronted with a truth? And, you know, I'll just like to help lead the way here, because I think, especially if we're evolved and self-aware, like everybody in this training, we tend to think we don't get defensive, but there are probably places where you do, right? And so, you know, I'm just the first to admit that that can happen for me. Like, you know, for example, if I have to be somewhere physically, you know, like for a meeting or meet a friend or appointment, you know, whatever it is, I'm oftentimes late. And when I'm kind of given the feedback or reflected the truth that, it, you know, I've annoyed someone because I'm late, instead of just owning up to it, I'll get really defensive or I'll make up excuses. So what role does getting defensive play for you? Thank you. how does your relationship with defensiveness, whatever it is, impact your ability to reflect the truth with others? How does your relationship with defensiveness impact your ability to reflect the truth with others? Just three more questions. Historically, how have your family members received hard truth and feedback from you? How do your family members take in, receive, respond to feedback or hard truth? Do they respond or do they react? If they react, how so? Next question. What comes up for you when you think about holding space for somebody who is very uncomfortable? What comes up for you when you think about holding space for someone who's very uncomfortable with something you've just shared? And then last question for right now, what would you need to believe in order to be fully present to reflecting the truth with your client? What would you need to believe in order to be fully present to reflecting the truth with your client, fully present and fully willing to reflect the truth with your clients? What would you need to believe? All right. Let's take a few minutes before we get into the mechanics of the skill. I'd love to hear what is coming up for you through the journaling. What are you seeing? What's important for you and for your coaching? Star two. What are you seeing?
Hi, Joanna. So I wanted to ask a little bit about the question about playing defensive, the benefits of playing defensive when I'm being told the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And what I wrote down was the benefit was I don't have to do anything uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I also said, for me, I think getting defensive is, I usually just say, I don't know if I can do that, or I'll just sort of try to skip over that section that we were supposed to work on in a coaching session. So that is kind of being defensive, right?
Yeah, I would say that's the version. So it, tell me if I'm getting this right, but it sounds like what you're saying is that you're seeing that when you get defensive about something, you kind of check out.
Yeah, like I just usually, or I'll just say, oh, I don't think I can do it, or something like that. It's just like some, like I never really go for it directly, but that's what I learned from this.
How do you think that might be impacting your willingness to share truths with clients?
I recently started being really honest with clients, but before I was, like, there's always a part of me, so this is my fear, and my fear is that I make the client so angry that they hate me because I said, do you think this might be true? And then they get so angry at me, and they think that, oh, this coaching is bullshit, and then they give up on it. That's my worst fear.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you can see that. So what's the belief that you came up with for that last question? Like, what would you need to believe in order to be really willing to reflect hard truth?
I would need to believe that I need to be the person that is willing to give them a chance to see the truth, and that even if they choose to leave because I did say the truth, that it's worth a shot, and that I am there to totally be there for them emotionally if it's, like, hard for them to accept what's going on.
Yeah. Nice. Good. Thank you. Really good. Kara.
Yeah. what I landed on was when I think about holding space for people who are uncomfortable, my go-to in, like, their discomfort is to second-guess myself.
Uh-huh.
And just seeing how not trusting my instincts. And when I second-guess myself, then I might not create enough space for them to really, just even enough silence for them to kind of receive what I'm saying.
Mm.
And I tend to maybe not really stay on point, but to kind of, well, maybe this is true, or maybe this is true, or maybe this is true.
You get a little wishy-washy about it, or you say it,
yeah,
but then you really gloss over and move on to the next thing without giving it space.
Yeah. And what was helpful is in order to be fully present, reflecting the truth that, so much of that for me is just believing that my instincts are valid.
Yeah.
And holding that as a way of standing up for my clients and really making it about them and not about me.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Really nice. Good. Who is this? I just took you off mute. 8451 are your last numbers.
Joanna?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, hi, it's them.
Hi.
Hi. this is really interesting, and I think what I'm really taking from this is seeing how a little bit in my family of how sort of truth was received and sort of the, like, everyone kind of feeling very strong about their truths and defensiveness in this. And I think from that and taking it into my work with clients, I think what I will tend to do at times is avoid a reaction of maybe, defensiveness or victimization or taking it personally. And because of carrying that I may not come forward so fully with the truth in those conversations. And so I just missed her name, but who had just mentioned a little bit of sort of not being really clear about the point, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Almost waiting around it, but not really going right in there. And so even just having that awareness, really, we're talking about awareness. So I'm already starting to see that it is possible in a loving way to move forward in those conversations and to really be there. And there are, even if, say, a victim or reaction comes up, that I can still hold space for that as long as I'm coming into it from that really loving place. And I'm not, you know, that is really completely different from, you know, criticism. You know, that's, it's a really different place. So I'm seeing that that's possible.
Yeah, I'm so, so glad that you can see that. And, you know, my guess for you, for Kara, for Sophia, for all of us is that being more willing, it's just, it's going to bring the client further into where they need to go, right, to be able to deliver that. Good.
So much. So much.
Yeah. Good. Who is this? I've just taken you off mute. It's an international number. 1155. Last four numbers.
Hi, Joanna.
Hi. Who is that?
It's Ruth. Ruth.
Hi, Ruth.
Hi. Yeah, so the question that I wanted to talk about is the one where you asked about what comes up for holding the space for somebody who's uncomfortable about what I've shared. So for me, I think I think it's the feeling of not being comfortable and also not knowing what to say and thinking that I've probably like hurt this person's feelings and they're gonna probably not want to continue coaching anymore because what I've shared has really triggered them or hurt them.
Yeah, and how do those fears stand in the way of you really powerfully creating awareness for your client?
I think it kind of like holds me back from really saying what needs to be said.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm so glad you're bringing this up because this is, I want to share something that's so obvious, but sometimes we can forget it, even those of us that teach it, myself included. Discomfort isn't a bad thing. Discomfort can actually be a really good thing. So I happen to have birthed two children, and I can tell you the birth, both of those births, both of those new lives, amazing, 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 parts of the birth itself, totally uncomfortable, but I needed to go through the discomfort for the birth to happen, right? So sometimes as coaches, we can get really scared of our clients being uncomfortable, but sometimes, not always, but really a lot of the time, there is some discomfort to the growth process. Does that feel like an important truth for you to hold on to?
Yeah, yeah. Like I've also given birth to two kids, so I totally get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Great awareness. I'm going to take one or two more shares. These are also juicy. This is someone in Denver, 5921 are your last whispers.
Hi, this is Johanna. Can you hear me?
Hi, yeah. Hi, Johanna.
Hi. Actually, Bolden is in there. But I know you asked this. I know you presented the question about sharing controversial, about being willing to share controversial opinions. And it's a much bigger question than what I wanted to share. But, I mean, than the example I'm going to state. But partly you spoke about the coaching industry as, you know, being controversial, that we don't, you know, the clients in the coaching industry may not be able to make gigantic amounts of money or whatever, when and being down on the coaching industry from having so much marketing in that, you know, that speaks to people's humongous ambitiousness that may be not that may be bogus, but I had a client recently who I didn't think this would happen, but he tripled his investment in a premium program with me in less than 4 months. And that, I realized in some ways my mindset might have been holding him back.
Yeah.
Because I, and that was, I know this controversialness is a much bigger question.
No. This is, I'm so glad you're bringing it forward, because what you're speaking to is filters, right?
Mm-hmm.
What you're actually speaking to is filters. And whenever I share anything controversial, I need to check my filters first. So I will never tell a client, you can't triple, you know, your income. I will never say that. I will say I'm willing to, you know, take a look at and strategize, and, you know, I will help you as much as I can. But I just want to share with you from my experience, not always, but from my experience, it may take this amount of time. Or from my experience, the best way is this instead of all of these newfangled techniques, right? But so I'm sharing it, but I'm checking my filter when I do. So I'm so glad you're bringing that up, because it's so true. Our mindset can get in the way, and that's why it's so important to check filters. That makes sense?
Well, yes. I mean, I didn't tell him he couldn't. I just stood aside and watched this amazing situation unfold that really blew me away.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you.
Yeah, no, I'm really glad you're bringing it forward. Thank you.
And I'm late to jump in, but I'll be caught up in a few weeks, so I understand more about all of this.
Yeah, no worries at all. No, it was great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and then I'll just take one more from Oregon, 2064.
Hey, Joanna, it's Linda Bard.
Hey, Linda, I thought that might be you.
Yeah. I wanted to go back to the previous question and that part of a client being triggered and wanting to, you know, give up, quit, whatever. What are some approaches that you take when you see this is obviously happening? What are question statements, approaches you take in that situation?
If someone is triggered by a truth that you've reflected?
Correct.
Yeah. I'm going to answer briefly now because we actually have like a full training on it, and I do want to get to like how to actually reflect the truth. Of course, you know, it depends on the situation, but I would actually respond to it with more truth reflecting or more more awareness creating. So if somebody is triggered, you know, again, I may use the reflecting the truth, I may use questioning, but I'm going to try to help them see that they're triggered, right? So via questioning, it may be like, you know, what are you feeling right now towards me, or how are you feeling in your body right now, or you know, what are you noticing about your mood right now or your judgments right now, right? So I might do that via a question, or I might do it via direct reflecting the truth and say, you know, I might be off, so you let me know, but I feel like what I just shared with you might have really triggered you and made you feel really uncomfortable. You know, is that true? Because if yes, you know, let's look at this together. So
okay.
I'll, one way or another, I'll create awareness around the trigger. How does that land for you?
Good. And so is that something that we'll be covering in the next call?
When somebody gets triggered?
Yeah.
We've got a while to get there, but I'm going to share right now how to reflect the truth. So that hopefully somebody will not get triggered. It's not foolproof, but I'm going to give a method that works most of the time.
Okay. Good.
Yeah, so it's a great segue. Yeah, it's a great segue into it. So let's just go there. So how do you reflect the truth? So first, just kind of like ways to prepare yourself, and then I'll get to what to actually say. So kind of in the preparation for reflecting the truth, here are some things that you want to keep in mind. First of all, you want to keep top of mind this question: what is it that my client isn't seeing, accepting, or fully embracing that would create a shortcut to their growth or results? I want you guys to write this question down. It's a really good question for you to be thinking about in your coaching sessions or after your coaching sessions. What is it that my client isn't seeing, accepting, or fully embracing that would create a shortcut to their growth or their results? Other thing in preparation, again, remember, always ask enough questions first to see if they can come to the awareness on their own, right? And also to make sure that you're getting it the right way, that the truth that you're seeing is right. Check in with your inner wisdom on whether or not the client is ready to hear the truth. Check in with your intuition and your inner wisdom on whether or not the client is ready to hear this truth. So this isn't a perfect science, but you know, some of the things around this is, you know, does this client have a history of being defensive? If so, you want to take that into consideration in how you deliver it to them or maybe not deliver it to them. You know, you may want to ask more questions then. You know, what is my client's mood today, right? A client that can normally hear a truth may, on a particular day, in a particular moment, not be able to. Next kind of preparation, be willing to be wrong. Be willing to be wrong. And what I mean by that is the truth that you're seeing, if you're going to reflect it, it may not actually be the client's truth. So you have to be willing to be wrong. And I'll share with you when we get to exactly how to do it, you know, how to work that in. But that's a really important, right? And there might be some inner work for you as the coach to do around this one. Do you believe that you need to be right all the time? Do you believe that it's a mark of a good coach if they're only right all the time? You know, do you believe that a bad coach, if you're wrong, it means you're a bad coach? Can you still feel valid and enough if you're not right all of the time? You know, coaching, as every situation in life, is like, it's humbling in a way. You know, my philosophy is you want to go with your hunches, but you also have to be willing to be wrong. And know that that's perfectly okay, and it's not going to damage the relationship at all if you've created a strong and tight container. Before you reflect the truth, just another preparation piece, reconnect to your love of your client, right? Just like really feel that love in your heart for your client and trust that your client is whole and complete exactly as they are. For me, it's also about trusting that my client is resilient. She can withstand the truth. Right, so that's all back to equal playing field. If it's skewed to where you think your client is better than you, then you're not going to have the confidence and the courage to share what you're seeing. If the playing field is skewed to where you think you're better than your client, then you run the risk of guruing your client and disempowering them, right? And I know that if you're in this program, you don't want to guru your client. So really making sure that the playing field is equal is important here. Okay, so that's all the prep. And then how do you actually reflect the truth? Well, I'm going to give you three different strategies or three different ways. So the first way, I'm just going to call this like the standard way, for lack of a better calling it. Well, it's the standard way. So step one is to ask permission. first, before you reflect the truth, I find that it's really, in almost all cases, not every single one, but in almost all cases, you want to ask permission first. If you can get the green light to share something, then already your client is more open, more willing, less defensive, right? So how I ask permission is I might say, there's something that I'm noticing about what you're sharing that you may or may not be aware of. Would you be open to me sharing this with you, right? Or there's a pattern that I'm noticing here for you. Would you be open to me sharing this with you? Or there's something I sense you might not be seeing here. Would you be open to me sharing this with you, right? So step number one in the standard way, you want to get permission. You want to ask for permission and get it. Then step number two is about sharing it while willing to be wrong. Sharing it while willing to be wrong. So that may sound like this. Now, I might not be getting this the right way, and I really trust your inner wisdom on this, so tell me if I'm getting it right. But I've noticed X, right, whatever the truth is. I've noticed that every time you have a success, it's followed by a self-sabotage. I notice that you're such a confident person, but when it comes to networking, it's like you lose all of your confidence, right? Whatever it is. And then the follow-up is, am I getting that right? So I may not be getting this right. I really trust that you know best. I trust your inner wisdom on it. So let me know. I notice X. X is where you're going to reflect the truth. Am I getting that right? Now, just a little detail here, but it could be an important one. Sometimes you want, Kara actually brought this up. She said sometimes when she's second-guessing herself, she doesn't leave enough space around what she's sharing, right? So this is a place where you want to leave space for it to land, right? So when I tend to say I've noticed and then I reflect the truth, I might say it a little bit more slowly than how I speak normally. Or I might pause at the end of it just for, you know, like 3-4 seconds to let it land before I say, am I getting that right? Now, most of the time, you will be getting it right. And if you do it this way most of the time, it's going to be a big breakthrough moment for the client. They're going to say, oh, my gosh, I never thought of it that way, you know, whatever it is. Or they'll say, you know what, that's not exactly it, but what you just said made me realize, and then they'll recalibrate it for the truth that's right for them, right? So it'll activate something for them. And then from there, you want to go with follow-up questions, deeper questions about the breakthrough. So that's the first way, reflecting the truth, ask for permission, and then be willing to be wrong while sharing and asking if you've gotten it right and then following it up. The second way, and there might be questions on this, I'll open up for questions after I get through each of the ways. The second way to reflect the truth is through personal anecdotes. So you probably know what I mean by personal anecdote, but it's basically sharing a story. It could be personal or it could be about someone else. That is short, right? But it really, the moral of the story or the lesson in the story or the detail in the story actually is the truth that the client needs to hear. And it can be really powerful to do this as opposed to saying I'm noticing X, right? So how do you want to reflect the truth by sharing a personal anecdote? Number one, again, you want to ask permission to tell the anecdote. The reason why I almost always ask permission before I share an anecdote is because sometimes, you know, an anecdote can take 2 minutes, 3 minutes. You usually don't want it to take too much longer than that. But it can be perceived as wasting time, by some clients. So I like to ask. But the other reason that I like to ask is if it's for reflecting the truth, same reason for, that standard way. I want to get permission to reflect the truth, right? So I might say something like, your situation or what you're sharing really reminds me of something similar that happened to me a few years ago. Can I share? I think it would really be beneficial for your learning here. Right? So that's step number one. And then step number two is you would share the personal anecdote. It needs to be something that you've already fully worked through. If it's something that you're still triggered by or haven't learned all of the lessons or all of that, it's not going to work, right? Share the personal anecdote if you've worked through it already. And then step three from there is to ask a question. So to say, how does this relate to your situation? Or, what's this story bringing up for you? And again, be willing to be wrong. Sometimes I'll say, what's this story bringing up for you? Or how does this relate to your situation? And if it doesn't, let me know. I might be off here. The story may not relate to you, right? So that's the second way to reflect the truth. Personal anecdote can be a little softer than just that first standard way of reflecting the truth, right? Can get you there quicker maybe sometimes than asking questions, but a little softer than the direct. And then the third way, I'm just going to call this half reflecting, half questioning. So what this third way is, it's about introducing language into your questions that the client hasn't yet used. So it's definitely like a way of questioning, but it's direct in this reflecting the truth way, because you're introducing a zinger into the question itself. You're introducing language that's a zinger into the question itself that the client hasn't yet used. So I'll give you an example of this to make it more clear. Let's say you're in a conversation with a client and they're telling you they're working all the time, just working. They don't have enough time for themselves. They don't want to work all the time, but they end up working all the time. It's affecting their romantic life. It's affecting this, on and on and on and on, right? They're sharing this with you. So you might ask, so when did you become addicted to working? Right? So we're introducing language that the client hasn't used, but it's reflecting a truth because you're essentially saying, I hear that you're addicted to working, right? Or you might say, so when did you decide that you were going to risk everything in your life, even your health, for your work? When did you decide that you were going to risk everything, even your health, for your work, right? It's reflecting a truth because the truth that you're kind of sharing via the question is you're risking everything in your life for your work, right? So so this third way, again, is like half reflecting the truth, but within a question, using a new languaging that's kind of like a zinger that's going to activate awareness. All right, I just went through those three ways pretty quickly. So let's see, we've got a couple of minutes left. I want to open up for questions, but let me share homework and then I'll open up for cues. So first of all, we won't be meeting for about 2 weeks, actually exactly 2 weeks. I hope you all have very happy holidays and New Year. We'll be in Module 2 of Creating Awareness when we come back on January 2nd. I'm going to be taking a chunk of time off over the next 2 weeks, so if you don't see me on Facebook, if you post or whatever, know I'll get to it as soon as I get back. You're going to have two worksheets. One is just a resource sheet where I lay out the three ways that I just shared. I just lay out all of it and the languaging and all of that for you. And then the other worksheet is more of a worksheet that will help you go deeper. And if you're doing partner coaching, I want you to at least once during your session reflect a harder truth in one of these three ways. So practice one of these three ways. And again, I want you to keep top of mind for that entire partner session, what is my client not seeing, accepting, or fully embracing that would create a shortcut to their growth or their results? All right, so I'd love to hear, take a moment, write down, what's your big takeaway from today's call? What's a new thing that you're really taking away that's really important for you personally, your coaching practice, who you are as a practitioner? Maybe it's something you already knew but you're seeing more deeply, or something completely new. And I'd love to hear any questions or takeaways that you have. Star two. Questions or takeaways? Give me at least one takeaway so I know you're walking away with something good. Corey.
I really can hear more how important bravery is in this, and how, for me personally, that relates to living faithfully in bravery, and especially working with people and developing their faith. And that I can rely on that. I know that I'm brave, and I don't think I've been relying on that nearly as much as I can, especially because the skills that you shared and the things to pay attention to in reflecting hard truth are familiar to me. So I think the bravery will encourage me to trust and keep developing the skills.
Yeah.
And the second piece is me quoting you back to you, again, I cannot control and trust at the same time.
Yeah.
And this is so much about really not trying to control the situation by controlling inside me.
Yeah.
And really trusting the client to be strong, be resilient, be uncomfortable, and just trusting them wherever they're at. And that space holding is a really powerful image to stand in and invite people into in just simply being there. So some things I knew, but new ways of working with them and trusting them more.
Yes. I love so much of what you said. And there's just one thing I want to pull out. Being a really masterful coach, being a sacred depths coach requires bravery. If you're getting too comfortable too cushy, you know, in your coaching, you're not going as deep as you could be, and it's not as powerful as it could be. It does require bravery in moments. I'm really glad that you're bringing all that forward. Thanks, Corey.
Mm-hmm.
Dana. I think this is Dana.
Hello?
Hi.
Oh, hi, Joanna. I definitely loved this session. I work with oracles right now, since I'm not doing coaching, but I work with the I Ching, which is an oracle, and I realize how it already creates this space a little bit for it, because people are coming to me wanting to see some of this stuff reflected back. So that kind of came up for me, that people are already coming open to me reflecting back hard truth.
Mm-hmm.
But I also really loved just how to create a different sort of more open container around reflecting the truth. So I feel like sometimes I just reflect it. And I like how it's like ask permission and then hold space for it, keep a little space around it. And that I could definitely do more of. So I like how you laid that out.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm glad you're bringing that up. If you're on this call and you're really good at reflecting space, or reflecting the truth, but haven't had some structure around it, like I laid out today, I really want you to experiment with the structure. Good. Thank you.
Yeah.
See, two more hands raised. I'm going to take them. Ruth. I think this is Ruth. Maybe not. 1155.
Joanna?
Yeah, hi.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, so my question is, how does this work in a group coaching session? So, and I guess what I'm wondering is that, does it work better like with one-to-one clients? So can it also work in a group setting?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, such a great question. Yeah, 100%. It can absolutely work in a group setting, and I use it in groups online and in person all the time. Now, you know, the facilitation in groups is like a whole other training that I do, so I won't get too much into it. But definitely, if you're going to do it in groups, you want to know how to work. I mean, for anyone, one-on-one or groups, you want to know how to work with resistance archetypes. But especially with groups, just because when the resistance comes up in a group, you want to be able to handle it, you know, pretty easily and masterfully. And we'll definitely get there here. But, yeah, I use it in groups all the time. And what's so powerful about it is that when you're reflecting a harder truth to one person in a group, usually it's also a truth that somebody else in the group needs to hear. So
yeah.
It works double, triple, quadruple duty.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right, and I should know who this is because I think you've raised your hand already. 8451.
It's me. It's Viv.
Hi, Viv. I don't know why I'm not recognizing your number.
Yeah, I know it's. Oh, it's. I'm calling in directly from my Danish mobile. But So this is really big, Joanna. And I think what I'm taking from this is I'm noticing that my comfort zones are as like the cheerleader and the strategist in a way, and you know exactly why I'm in this course is really understanding and seeing the gaps in that in terms of how I'm able to support my clients. So my takeaway from today is to actually before, as I'm, you know, tuning into each client and preparing for them, is to ask myself, like, are there any truths that I intuitively have picked up or that I've picked up from their health history that I haven't reflected, you know, in a way that's not serving them? And for me now, I have a bit of a toolbox and a way, a technique, I guess, or a toolbox that I can draw on to do that in a way where I'm not worried about, you know, hurting or offending in a way, but that I can really do it. So that's my takeaway is before each client or as I'm prepping for each client to really ask about this.
Yeah, I love it. It's such a great practice to do. And then after a session, to also say, like, was there an opportunity that I missed, right? Because then you can just bring it in to the next session. And something about what you were just sharing reminded me of one thing I meant to share, but I forgot, is that the second way, the personal anecdote way, I mean, I did say it's softer, but sometimes, you know, in a certain moment, using the personal anecdote way is just a way for it to be received easier because you're normalizing, right? You're showing I had the same thing, right? So then the truth isn't so hard because you're normalizing it. So I know in your work, Viv, that's, you know, you can do that sometimes and sometimes not, but just, you know, for everyone, I just wanted to make sure I shared that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right, well, I'd love to hear more of your takeaways in the Facebook group. If any questions come up, let me know. And again, just wonderful end-of-year wishes to everybody. I hope you make some time and space for yourself during these next few weeks. I'll be thinking about you for sure. And I can't wait to see you January 2nd, fresh on the other side. So I'll see you then. Have a great rest of your day.
The moderator has left the conference.